Hey, this is Omar Hassan, and you're listening to Talkin' Schmidt.
May 28th, 2019, Talkin' Schmidt, episode 22. Hope y'all had a good Memorial Day weekend. Personally, I did my first ever memorial over Memorial Day weekend for the legendary Jake Phelps. It was a great day out at McLaren Park at the amphitheater known as Jerry Garcia. Arco was MC. We had some great speeches from Gons, Carroll, Cardiel, Tony V, Burn Dog, etc. It was really good, man. Missed Jake a lot, obviously, but hopefully that helped all of us. I got caught up with Ronald, not Donald. Shout out to the Dirty Pigeon.
Shout out.
He's going to come on to the show and give his side of the story to that big hungry fight when he gets back from Copenhagen. So we'll look forward to that. And big shout out to the Crocker Kids for holding it down. They got the whole crew up there, started chanting Jake's name, and Fatty got into it, and Peabody, Gut, everybody. Man, it was a good one. Real good one. Jake would be proud. Anyway, without further ado, I'm going to hand the mic over to Mr. Archimedes, give you guys a little taste of what happened at the memorial before we dive into episode 22 with Christian Svitak. Thanks again for all your support, guys. Take care.
All right, we're going to get this started here. Just want to welcome everyone, you know, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages. Welcome to pay tribute and honor a great man of James Kendall Phelps. Right there, this fucking guy right here. You better fucking recognize this man right here. So, we're gonna start off musical introduction with Justin Figgy Figueroa.
We all know it. No one lived like he did.
Soak up the energy, Jake. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're doing the Lord's work.
Oh, el loquito. Now I know who you're talking about.
On my mother's grave, we all love you, bro.
I mean, Jake was a philosopher of bullshit.
Once I got a dose of Jake, I never wanted to leave his orbit.
I thought he said from the A. I didn't hear he said from the Bay. Motherfucking Pablo Jordy! Man, you didn't see the shit we saw at that skate park.
Jake! Jake!
Motherfucker! You are dead! Motherfucker!
He good guy. But it's kind of real right here.
Just gonna let the all cars try right here.
All big dogs in.
Schmitty, what do you think, Schmitty?
96 times Schmitty.
Talking Schmidt.
He's so fucking busy.
Shit my pants, lad.
Your Rolodex is fucking deep.
Are you ready?
Come on, Smith.
Let's hear it for Jake Smith.
Yeah! Oh me, oh my, oh. I'm in Cleveland, Ohio, running around with my rag top down. Shout out to Jillian Welch.
Shout out.
Well, I'm pretty sure I met my next guest here at the midway point of King of the Road out in Milwaukee back in 2007. We might learn different, but I'm pretty sure that's where I got to know him at least. We might have seen him around. But I'm here in Cleveland, Ohio, and I got a little time to catch up with Christian Svitak. What's up, man?
What's up?
We're here in your town.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen you, I think.
Yeah.
What's been going on?
Man, I don't...
You moved back here, huh?
Yeah. So we just moved back here. Me, my wife, and my two daughters. We moved here December 1st, so we've been here like, I don't know, 4 months. And yeah, so we're just...
You were born and raised here?
Born and raised here. Moved away to San Diego in 98, so I've been there for like over 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we just wanted to bring our girls back here to raise them closer to family, at least for a little while. I don't know if it's going to be forever. So we rented our house out down in San Diego, and we're going to stay here for a while. And we're just going to kind of take it year by year, you know, like every year we'll reevaluate. And if we like it, we'll keep staying. And if the cold weather just gets on our nerves and the gray skies gets on our nerves, and we'll head back to San Diego, you know? So
nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's correct? Is that your recollection? We met at that King of the Road Midway, or
I don't know. I think, but at the same time, I don't know. I thought we met like
might have a been long earlier.
Years before that.
But the thing I remember about that is Jake and I went out there, and it was the midway point, and so we picked up the mystery guest. And that year, the theme was, it was like Black Label. So Black Label had an OG guy that used to be on Black Label as the mystery guest, and each team did the same thing. So Christian came in for Black Label. Jake and I went to pick him up. And with King of the Road, obviously the idea is to pack light, live large. But the next guy that came in was Daniel Haney, and he had this huge bag. Like, you've never seen a bag this big, and you're like, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like, hey, they said I could bring anything, so I brought a parachute. Because the dude just got into skydiving. And so his thing was like, before we get out on the roads, these guys are taking me skydiving.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that was pretty funny.
Wow.
Let's go back like to childhood days, and like, how'd you get into skateboarding? What was your first skateboard? Do you remember?
Yeah. So my first skateboard, my grandma bought it for me. It was a pink Nash Nightmare, which I still have.
Rad.
But it was like, this was the mid 80s, and I didn't know anything about skating, but I just saw skateboards, and I think I saw some kids in the neighborhood with some other toy store boards.
Uh-huh.
And there was just something about it that just seemed intriguing to me, but I didn't know there was a whole culture out there. And then it was fast forward to 1988, like spring of 88, kid down my street was throwing away an old Volterra skate zombie in his garbage.
Okay.
It had duct tape on it and stuff. It was really bad. I saw it. I was like, no way. So I took it out of his garbage can. I sanded it and painted it up. And I thought it looked super sweet. It was like neon green and neon pink grip tape I got on there from the local bike shop. Oh, and I think at this point, the local bike shop started carrying like, you know, some Powells and Santa Cruz and Sims and Visions. So I started to see like, oh, wow, there's like these really fancy boards out there that I still didn't understand, but it was beyond like Toys R Us.
Right.
So I was, I had my cool Volterra skate zombie, and I was walking around this thing called Home Days, which is like where the carnival comes through town every year, you know.
We had Hometown Days.
Yeah. So I was walking through there, and there was this table of guys sitting there, and they all were like 19, 20 years old. I was 13 at the time, and they all had like one dude had a mohawk, the other guy was like a full metal head. Like, they all just had this look about them, like fingerless leather gloves and whatnot. And one of them recognized me. He was an older guy that lived up the street. He's like, hey, Svitek, come here. And so I go up to this table of these guys, and they were super intimidating. They were just looking me up and down. And I even had like the total 80s like skate punk haircut, you know, with the bangs coming down, shaved on one side. I didn't know like what that meant. I think I saw a picture of a BMX guy in a magazine with that haircut, so I got it. And so they were looking me up and down and like looking at my cheat board and asking me these questions I had no answers to. And I thought they were vibing me out, but then they were like, you want to go skating with us? I was like, yeah, all right. So we then proceeded to go down, left Home Days to go to this church down the street. And on our way there, they started like jumping up on like the city trash cans and like jumping off of them and doing bonelesses and all this shit. And it was the most wild, just radical, aggressive thing I've ever seen. Like, these guys doing this stuff. I didn't know that you could do that on a skateboard. So I was like, oh my God. We get to the church parking lot and they just start doing like street plants and bonelesses and fast plants. And I just sat there and was blown away. Then they taught me how to do a boneless. They taught me how to do a boneless and like this really kind of like generic version of a street plant. It's kind of like more like a freestyle move or something, like a handstandy type move.
Uh-huh.
They taught me how to do those first two tricks. Then they went over and huddled in the corner. Oh, and by the way, these guys had a team that was, it was called Team Insanity.
Yes. Right.
They all had Team Insanity on their grip tape. They all had nicknames.
Fuck.
It was Tweaky, Psycho, Demo, McMad.
Sick.
Yeah, they all had nicknames. And so they were huddling in their corner, and then they turned to me like, hey, like, you want to be on Team Insanity? And I was like, I guess so. And they're like, no, you either do or you don't. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, I do. I want to be on Team Insanity.
Yeah.
So they were like, all right. Well, if you're going to be on Team Insanity, you have to have a nickname. And I was like, okay. And they're like, well, we like your hairdo. So you're Do. So that was my nickname, Do. And they spelled it D-E-W.
Okay.
So they immediately like put Team Insanity on my grip tape, wrote Do on there, and then that was it. Like, oh. And so then that was also my introduction to punk rock, because they put me on Team Insanity.
Okay.
And then they gave me a copy of the Dead Milkmen Bucky Fellini album.
Sick.
And they're like, go home and listen to this. I went home and listened to that. I took my Kiss tape out.
Was that Bitch and Camaro on there?
No, that was on Big Lizard in My Backyard.
Oh, okay.
But I put that tape in and was like blown away. I like made my mom listen to it.
Wow.
I was like, listen to this, Mom. This is crazy music. And I just was so like, oh, man, I just get so excited thinking about those times. But that was my introduction to skateboarding and punk rock, and it all happened July 2nd, 1988. I still remember the date.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Dude, some people remember the date, like, and that's so special because I don't have the date for myself, but, like, I really, I get hyped when people are like, oh, yeah, July, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
that exact year, exact date, remember the situation. Yeah, that was my next question, though, was going to be, did music and skating come together, or did one lead into the other?
No.
That's kind of how it was for us, too. It was like, for us, it was kind of like the punk rock situation where it was like, all these dudes suck. Let's rebel against them. We don't want to be. And then skateboarding somehow was kind of in that same vein where it was like, nobody wanted to skateboard. So it was cool.
Yeah.
That's what we wanted to do. But yeah. So that was kind of one of the first bands for you. Like, do you remember your first vinyl or cassette or whatever you were getting back then?
Yeah, it was heavy cassettes. And actually my whole first, you know, I listened to Kiss religiously from the time I was an infant because my older brother had all the Kiss albums.
Right.
So Kiss was my favorite all the way up until, you know, I was listening to Kiss albums and playing with G.I. Joe and Star Wars until the day I met Team Insanity. And that day I dropped all that other shit. And it was all cassettes. So from those guys, I also met some older punk rock guys. I started getting introduced to this world. And I literally used to, my one friend, his older brother, had an extensive punk rock record collection. And I would go over his house every day. My mom would buy me generic blank cassettes from like Gold Circle or Zayers or wherever.
Uh-huh.
And I would take those tapes over to my buddy's house and I would just copy all these punk rock records. So the Dead Milkmen was like my first, but after that quickly came, just off the top of my head, you know, like Misfits, Sex Pistols, Suicidal Tendencies,
right,
you know, everything like that. And it's the whole music thing, how this is, I try to explain to people how intertwined it is with me with skateboarding, because for me, it happened on the same day. So to me, it was like skateboarding is punk rock and punk rock is skateboarding. That's just how it was for me.
Uh-huh.
And when you skated, that's the music you listened to because it was aggressive and like, therefore you skated aggressive, like,
yep,
you know? And so I remember as I started getting deeper into it, this is how intertwined I thought it was. When I started getting deeper into it, I remember talking to my friend's older brother and I was just like, I assumed that all punk rock bands rode skateboards. I assumed that they all were skaters, right, and vice versa. All skaters listened to punk rock. And like, I remember, and he was just like, no, man, they don't. Like, I remember like I think like the Exploited was coming to town, and I just assumed like that like Waddy from the Exploited would be like skating downtown somewhere, yeah. Right? And he was like, "No, man, like I don't think they skate." And I was like, "So I remember having this conversation. I was like, so the Sex Pistols, like Johnny Rotten and Sid Vicious, like they weren't skaters?" And they were like, "No, they weren't skaters." And I was so blown away by that. I could not comprehend that, like, you know, Johnny Rotten or Joe Strummer were not skateboarders. I just thought that's how it was, you know?
Even some of the skate rock bands, I was just like, wait, they don't all skate?
Yeah.
Like one guy skates maybe sometimes, and you'd be like, oh.
Yeah. Okay. And then I started meeting other local skaters in the area, and I had some good friends that were skaters that were like, they were like on the hockey team and stuff, and they listened to like rap, or like they listened to like Guns N' Roses and like heavy metal, like battle bands, and I just was like, what? Like, I didn't get it. I didn't understand. I just could not understand that. But yeah, it's funny how that all is when you're a kid like that, trying to like figure it all out, you know?
Yeah. What was your first tattoo?
First tattoo is on my wrist. This is it right here. It was the TI for Team Insanity and the Black Label Elephant.
Wow. What year was that?
That was the year I turned pro. I turned pro in 1999. I never had a tattoo, but when Lucero turned me pro for Black Label, I was like, dude, I need to get a tattoo for like, this guy's turning me pro, right? So I kind of got like I wanted it to be like, you know, it was out of all my tattoos, they're all stupid, but like that was the only like thought out one where I was like, I want to get the TI for Team Insanity because that's like my roots, where I'm from. You know what I mean? You never forget where you're from.
Yeah.
And
that was 88.
That was 88.
And 99 is when you got the tattoo.
Yeah. And then 99, I turned pro. So then that was like turning pro for me, a kid from Cleveland. That was like the childhood dream of like, holy shit.
Super sick.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, in 99, were you still in contact with anyone from TI?
Oh, yeah. Dude, we're still in contact.
Still now?
I just had lunch with Psycho the other day.
How cool.
Yeah.
Most of those guys are still in Cleveland?
Yeah. They're all in Cleveland. Right. And we all still keep in touch. We hang out. Now, those guys don't skate anymore. Mm-hmm. They're all I'm sure they're all having like their 50th birthday around now. They have been and they are coming up. But yeah, they don't skate anymore, but they have all been massive like supporters of me, like my whole career. Like those sick guys, yeah, man. I've always put like snuck like TI on some of my pro models and stuff like that. And like they've got my pro models hanging up and
that's radical.
Yeah, like anytime there was like a demo that came through town or the Vans Triple Crown contest would come through, those guys would come out full support. You know, those are the guys that taught me how to skate when I was a little kid. And they have just like, they've always been like my just such huge supporters when, you know, things started to work out for me on a pro level, you know.
How did the whole Black Label thing work? Did you send in a sponsor me tape, or did you meet John and the tour out here? Or how'd that work out?
It's a combination of things, and I love this story too. So I first got sponsored by a company called Invisible, which was Dave Bergetholdt's company. It was like a brother company to Blockhead.
Uh-huh.
And I got sponsored by them by sending sponsor me videos. I used to, you know, I lived in Cleveland. I used to work downtown Cleveland right out of high school. And I got a camera and started making tapes. I wasn't even trying to get sponsored. At that time, there were so many little East Coast companies that I thought, because I knew other people around the state of Ohio that like would get boards from like some, you know, some little East Coast company. And I was like, well, shoot, I wonder if I make a video, someone will send me a board. And it kind of started like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would start making these videos and send them out. And I'd get a board from Shaft Wood. Remember them, Shaft?
Yeah.
I got I don't know who else I got some boards from, but then Laban Fideus from Invisible, he called me. I know this is straying off the Black Label question, but it's all part of the larger story. Laban.
Shout out to Laban.
Oh, I love Laban. So I was eating dinner with my mom and dad, working full time here in Cleveland, and the phone rings, and he's like, hey, is Christian there? And I was like, this is. He's like, this is Laban Fideus. And I seriously thought, I was like, dude, shut up, man. I thought it was one of my friends.
Like a crank
call. I've never talked to a pro skater before. And he was one of my favorites because he could ollie big gaps. So I was like, holy shit, dude. Like, he's gone. Holy shit, you know? So he was just like, yeah, man, I got your video. I loved it. And by the way, this first video I ever sent out was 20 minutes long. Because I thought in my mind that anybody wanting to see me skate, I have to show how I really skate. It can't just be, in my mind, I was like, I can't just send like a 2-minute video of like, you know, my perfect best tricks. It's got to really show like how I skate, everything I skate.
Uh-huh.
So I sent out a 20-minute video.
Whoa.
So he was like, dude, I love your video. I'm going to send you a board and some wheels and a shirt. And I want you to keep filming. And every time you send me a video, I'll send you some more stuff. He's like, but my advice is from here, don't make any more 20-minute videos. Just keep it to 2 minutes. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So that led into me getting on Invisible Flow, then ended up getting me onto Invisible as an amateur on the team and getting ads and going on tour, which led to me moving to San Diego to further that.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved to San Diego. They gave me a job in the Climax warehouse, which was Invisible, Tracker Trucks, I don't know, whatever else they, Orion Trucks, whatever else they did there. I lived and worked in the warehouse. But then at the end of 98, they pulled the plug on Invisible. So here I am. I was like, well, I guess my skateboard dream is over. I'm going to go back to Ohio and get my old printing job back. And that was fun. Right?
Yeah.
Well, so I was riding an old Invisible board and they were gone. And it just so happened that Mike Vallely and Matt Hensley had just gotten on Black Label, which, back it up, Black Label was always my favorite skateboard company since it started.
Oh,
Black Label was hugely supported in Cleveland by a local bike shop called Schneider's Bike Shop, and Ken Schneider was just a rad guy that there was a lot of older Cleveland skaters that used to go out to Huntington Beach in the 80s, so they were friends with Grosso, Ricky Barnes, Lucero. So when they would come back to Cleveland, they would tell Ken Schneider, hey, you need to carry Black Label. So as a kid here, I just thought Black Label was the best. I always rode Black Label boards, sweatshirts, hats, t-shirts. I always got Lucero's ads. Like, as a kid in high school, when I would see those Black Label ads, he'd always put in this, like he ran a sequence once of someone doing a trick, and he just ran black boxes and just described what the trick was. And as like a 16-year-old kid, I just thought that was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
So anyways, Black Label was my favorite. Growing up, Vallely and Hensley were always my two top favorite skaters. They got on Black Label, and I was like, oh my God, that's like the most amazing thing ever. Well, then all of a sudden, I see a flyer that they're doing a demo at a skate shop in Solana Beach down in San Diego.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, I got to go to this, man. I want to meet these guys. So I went, and it was literally like just this crappy little demo behind a skate shop. And I got the courage to go up to Mike and Matt, and it just like total fanboy was like, hey, man, I wanted to say hi. You know, I'm from Cleveland and I'm living out here. I was riding for Invisible, but they got the plug pulled on it. So I'm whatever. And I just, you know, whatever. I just fanned out on them and just told them how whatever great they were.
Yeah.
And how sick it was that I thought they were on Black Label. So then they kept talking to me, and like, you know, they treated me like, you know, like a normal human being. And they talked to me and were very nice. And they were like, hey, why don't you skate this demo with us? So I was like, oh, all right. So here I am skating the demo with like my two favorite skaters growing up. And afterwards they said, hey, do you have a video? Or somehow it came up. And I said, yeah. And they were like, you should send it to Lucero. So I was like, okay. They were like, so they gave me Lucero's address, his number. And they were like, send this video to him and follow up. Like, this could go somewhere. So I was like, all right.
Keep it to 2 minutes.
So yeah, keep it to 2 minutes. So I sent this video to Lucero. I ended up calling Lucero, and in the Climax warehouse, I remember, as I was living there under a desk, I remember being on the phone, and I'd always use their phone for long distance. This is before cell phones.
Mm.
So I would, you know, rack up Larry Balma's cell phone or long distance bill. Thank you, Larry. And me and Lucero talked on the phone. The first time I ever talked to Lucero, we talked on the phone for like 2 hours. I had so much knowledge about all the Black Label history. And so John told me, he's like, yeah, man, watch your video. It's a great video, man. Ready to do a wall, and it's fucking hot, man. So good, awesome, man.
Good impression. Shout out to Lucero.
Shout out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then he then told me that, like, before even seeing the video, that, you know, Mike and Matt had, I guess, had, you know, told him, like, hey, we met this kid, Christian, like, you should put them on Black Label or whatever.
Sick.
So there you have it. Lucero, you know, was like, yeah, man, come on up to get aboard. I want to be.
What was the team like back then? Who was on the Rasta?
Oh, dude, it was so good. So I was the first, like, new young guy. Lucero always referred to me as being, like, the first of, like, the new generation. So this was before, you know, like, Gilly and Ragdoll and Melcher and everybody came along. So it was...
After Cardiel and Upson?
No, Upson was still there.
Oh.
God, Upson was so good, man.
Yeah.
He still is. I haven't seen him in a long time, but I'm sure he's still so good. But it was Valerie, Hensley, Upson, Brian Sieber.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. Jim Gagne, Neil Hendricks.
Wow.
Jeff Grosso, John Lucero. And I feel like that was it when I got on. So pretty heavy.
Jason.
Oh, Jason. How can I forget Jason? And Jason Adams.
Okay.
So I got on the week before Halloween, 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did the first ever Black Label tour. Spring 99.
Wow.
And it was, dude, I was in a van with all those guys minus Matt. Matt wasn't on that tour and Hendrix wasn't on that tour, but everyone else was. Yeah. Seeing, dude, Upson, I just, yeah.
And that's how you make it or don't make it pretty much. That first van ride is pretty crucial.
Oh yeah, man.
It's like first impressions go a long way, and
yeah,
if you're the kid that can't handle it, they're like, no, yeah, not coming again.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of pressure with like some of your favorite dudes too. You're just like, fuck, I can't kook it.
It was so much pressure. And what I can take away from that tour, it was so much pressure for me. Number one, Mike Vallely, he was also the tour manager at the time. He drove the van. He led the tour.
Oh,
and
wow.
That, if you've ever done a tour with Mike, it's like, it's fucking, dude, you do it. You
boot
don't.
Camp.
Oh, yeah, man. And it's, but that, and it's rad though, because that has carried with me through my whole career. So when I do a skateboard tour, I always revert back to that. Like, there's a certain way you do a tour. And it's like, when you show up at a place, it don't matter how tired you are, how hungry you are.
Yeah.
You bust, man.
Yeah.
You roll up and you bust and you sign every autograph and you shake every hand and you don't complain. You know, that's so there was that level of like, I got to keep up with Mike V, mm-hmm, and like, I got to prove to him, like, I can tour, I can throw down.
Right.
And then at the same time, I'm sitting in the back with Upson, Sieber, and Gagne, and the entire time, I'm still trying to, I think, like, Gagne was trying to like figure me out. You know, Gagne's like, you know, he's this East Coast, he's man's man, you know what I mean? And I'm just like this dork, straight edge kid. Like, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs. And Gagne's just trying to figure out like, who is this goon, you know? And the whole time Upson's trying to get me to agitate Gagne. So Gagne will punch me in the face.
Oh, fucking button pusher.
Yeah, so he was being the button pusher, and I never got punched in the face, but it was great, man.
Who did you end up rooming with mostly back then?
I don't remember, but I would just probably say it ended up coming down to, I ended up spending a lot of time with Mike. Me and Mike have become, I mean, him and I have been pretty much best friends for the past 21 years. Me and Mike have been really close ever since that first tour. Me and Jason Adams have always been really close, mm-hmm, ever since. And shortly after that tour, me and Gagne became really close.
Oh.
And me and Gagne actually did like I went out and stayed with him in Massachusetts, and we filmed for Label Kills together and then did like a two-man tour.
Nice.
Just me and Gagne. And that was, not to sound cheesy, but I think that was, I always feel like that was mine and Gagne's like bonding moment. So looking back on that, like those guys, we all grown really close to each other, you know?
Sick.
Yeah.
Who are some names that came out of this Cleveland area that people would know? Like CJ, obviously.
Yes. Cyril Jackson, CJ, him, he's the hot young guy. He's out of here. He's kind of out of here / Bakersfield, right? I think.
Born
in Bakersfield. I think he's got his grandma.
Was GSD from out here?
So GSD is from Southern Ohio more.
Like Cincinnati?
Yeah, I think GSD is somewhere from down there. Okay. So here's the Cleveland guys. The Cleveland guys would be that I can think of. I could be wrong. Myself, Brad Stabus from here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Brad.
Oh, you got any Stabus stories?
Oh, God, dude. I got lots of Stabus stories. Fun stories.
Is he younger than you or same age?
Yeah. I used to babysit him.
No way.
Yes. I used to babysit Brad. So Brad is from a city just not far from here called Lakewood. It's actually right down the road.
Oh, yeah. I saw the signs.
He's from Lakewood. And when he was in middle school, his mom moved to my neighborhood. Oh, here's my introduction to Brad. It's so classic. Black Label's my favorite company, right? Me and my friends. Brad Stava moves to Garfield Heights. And we hear rumors from the younger skaters that there's this new kid in their school that says he's sponsored by Black Label.
Oh.
And me and my friends were like, we're going to kill this kid. Oh. He's not sponsored. This kid, there's no kid here sponsored by Black Label. We thought it was like, I don't know what we're thinking. We're like thinking it's like dishonorable to like say you're sponsored by Black Label or something. Okay. I don't know. So we're going to beat up this like 12-year-old, right? I don't know. So we finally meet Brad and we love him. We're like, this kid's great.
Yeah.
He's such a ball of energy, big goofball, and an amazing skater. Like he was, like I said, Brad was like, I don't know, 11, 12. And he was doing everything that us high school guys were doing, if not more.
Okay.
Every big gap we'd go to, Brad was there flying down it. Sick. I mean, so anyways, I became really close with Brad and
shout out to Staba, by the way.
Shout out. Yeah, man, he is so good. So yeah, I used to babysit Brad, and then right after I got out of high school, his mom moved to Walnut Creek and rest is history. Like he got hooked up with Ron Allen, I think, with
Fun and right.
Everything took off for him, and I was back in Cleveland looking at, you know, magazines with Brad Staba's checkout and Brad's, you know, all the stuff of Brad Staba, and he got on Foundation, and I was back here in Cleveland watching little Brad.
Did he get on Foundation before you got on Label?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think he was on Foundation before I was even on Invisible. Like he...
Damn.
So anyways, Brad is always like a great skater very, very early on. So me and Brad, Scott Pizzell, Maple Skateboards.
Oh, yeah.
He's from here.
Okay.
Another one, man. I remember skating with Scott back when we were in high school, and it's an amazing skater. I don't know, Drew Desort. I think he skates
from here.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Drew, I used
Blood
to
Blood Wizard.
Yeah, I used to hook up when I started 1031. I used to hook up Drew. Drew went on the Blood Wizard, and I used to hook up CJ, and CJ went on to Baker.
Right.
And then who else is? I'm trying to think of Cleveland. If I don't say everybody, I'm going to get in big trouble. I think that's it. I'm sorry if I'm forgetting anybody. But then Ohio, let's go bigger.
Yeah.
The whole state. We got Dave Coyne.
Okay.
Which he, Maple Skateboards, he was more from, I think he might have been morphed by like the West Virginia border, but he went to college in Akron, I think.
Uh-huh.
Chad Knight, Columbus.
Oh, Chad Michael Knight.
Yep. Also ex-1031 team rider.
Yep. Also Cayman Island Destroyer.
Cayman Island Destroyer, for sure. Mark Heinzman is from Dayton, I think. Rob Dyrdek is from Dayton.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, there's somebody else from Columbus I'm missing. I could be wrong, but wasn't Roskop from Ohio?
Maybe. I don't know.
And that would have been way before my time, but I thought I heard that Roskop was from Ohio originally. Huh. I could be wrong.
I know Patrick Odell's from Columbus.
Yes, he's from Columbus.
And Angela Boatwright, my friend, she's from up there too. Well, hold on. Let's take a break and get a word from our friends, and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, this is David Gravett, and you're listening to Talkin' Schmidt.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden, and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
Break. Fuck.
All right, well, we're back. We got Christian Svitek on the program today, kids. I'm in Cleveland. This is my first time here, and actually enjoying it. It's pretty cold. I came from Phoenix Am, which was 80, and it's 40 here, so I'll probably be sick in a couple days.
Yes, you will.
So what's the deal with the Deal Sisters?
Oh.
How did you meet them?
I first met Kelly back when I used to live here. She used to do a band called the Kelly Deal 6000.
In Cleveland?
Yeah, I met her in Cleveland. So her and her sister Kim are from Dayton.
Okay.
Yeah, they're from Dayton, Ohio. So I was a big Breeders fan, and Breeders broke up, and it was sometime before I moved away to California. This was like mid-90s. Kelly used to do a band called the Kelly Deal 6000.
Oh.
And then she came to Cleveland back then, and I was at the show. I ended up talking to her after the show. And then fast forward years later, I'm in California, and I ended up talking with her again after a breeder show in San Diego. I don't know if she remembered me from the show back in the 90s or what, but we started talking. We had mutual friends, and Kim knew Neil Blender, and Neil Blender's a friend of mine.
Oh,
so
sick.
We had talked about that.
Oh, rad.
And then I was back here once, and we became Facebook friends. And then the one day I was just, this was years ago, I was visiting my parents, and I hit up Kelly, and I was like, hey, I'm in Cleveland. If you and Kim ever want to play music, I'd love to, you know, come down to Dayton. So Kelly hit me back. She's just like, yeah, you want to come down tomorrow? And I was like, sure, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, so I drove down to Dayton, and I met her and Kim at their parents' house, and we actually ended up never playing music. We sat on their parents' back porch and played board games and talked for hours.
Wow.
On their back deck. And then it was like super late at night, and I was like, oh, I guess we're not playing music. But then Kim was just like, hey, you want to go over to my house and see all my Breeders stuff? I was like, yeah, let's do that. So
Wow. Then
we went over to Kim's house. She doesn't live too far away. And we went down into her basement where she's got all the Breeders' Masters, Pixies.
Wow.
I mean, it's all like her zone. Yeah, they just like showed me all like the equipment. And I was like, oh, maybe we're going to play now. But I think it was like too late. And they're like, okay, yeah, it's too late or whatever. So
from
that moment, it started a friendship. And yeah, from there, you know, we've just been really close friends. I consider Kelly one of my best friends. And then I play part time. Her and my friend Mike Montgomery, he lives in Cincinnati. They have a band called R Ring, and I'm kind of like a part time drummer. Like when they do tours, you know, they ask me if I'm available and go on tour and drum for them. And I've recorded some drums on some of their songs on their R Ring album.
Sick.
And then Breeders touring, like Kim hired me to drive. I had to drive, which I'll talk about stress, man. I don't know how many years ago it was, but Breeders were doing their 30-year anniversary tour for Last Splash. They came to California, and Kim hired me to drive all their band equipment from Los Angeles back to Dayton to her house.
Wow.
So I drove a truck, a box truck, with all of Breeders, like all their stuff, man.
Oh my
and I'm
God.
Just driving cross country, like terrified. I spent 3 days of like, oh my God, dude, if I crash this truck, I will be like ruining Kim and Kelly's like everything. Oh, it was so stressful. But anyways, yeah, so we've been friends ever since. And like sometimes I'll help out. Kyle is their good friend that does all their merch. They'll come through California, and I'll jump on some dates with them and help do some merch for Breeders or whatever.
That's rad.
Yeah, in fact, I think I'm going down to Kelly's house like next month to.
She's still in Dayton.
Out. Yeah, they're all down in Dayton. And
oh, both of them.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rad. I'm a fan. Both those sisters.
Yeah. Oh man.
I actually went to that tour. The last
Splash. Oh, yeah, I remember.
It was at the Fillmore.
I got you on the list for that.
It was so sick. They just played the album, like, beginning to end, and then they covered, like, I think Helter Skelter, some Beatles song that was fucked up how amazing it was.
They cover
It's a Beatles song. It's the Gun.
Warm Gun.
Yeah, Warm. Yeah, yeah, that's the one. And it though their version, if you haven't heard it, find it. It's super good.
Yeah, that song. It's on their first album, Pod.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they probably played that in like the encore or something.
Yeah, that's what it was. Oh yeah, because I think they did play a lot of Pod in the encore. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Ohio, yo.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, one thing that's just really cool about that is I've always played in punk bands, and I've just always played with friends, and it's like every song is, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, and we just, you know, we go for it.
Right.
But it's so fun recording and playing music with Kelly because, well, her and her sister, they just think about music so differently than I'm used to.
Uh-huh.
And being in a studio with Kelly, like, she'll just... Like, I've just seen her spend hours on, like, a tiny little part. Where, to me, I'm so used to coming from a world of, like, dude, we'll belt out a song, like, 3 tries. That's it. Put it on the album. That sounds great.
Right.
So, it's so cool. It's, like, I'm really into music. So, it's just, I really appreciate, like, that process and watching her go through that process.
I'd be too nervous. I'd just be like, yeah, I'm not worthy. Have you ever played with Hensley?
Have I ever played with Matt? I don't think I've ever played with Matt. But my old band, The Heartaches, we used to play at Hensley's club.
Oh, yeah.
He had that bar down in San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
10/31. It started on Halloween, or you were dressed up in a costume and you started thinking about a new company. How did you come up with this?
My whole Black Label run was over, and that's when I was... Actually, 10/31 was going to be a wheel company.
Oh.
Back when I was on Black Label. I actually approached Lucero. I was like, hey, do you think I do a wheel company? And he wasn't into it. So anyways.
Halloween's your favorite day?
Yeah, I was just trying to think of a name for a skateboard company. I was just thinking of things I like, and I really like Halloween.
Uh-huh.
So I immediately was like thinking of like, oh, well, like kind of Danzig, kind of, you know, he got Samhain. So that was kind of, you know, that was out for a name. And I was just trying to think of like another name for Halloween.
Yeah.
So then I came up with the date.
Uh-huh.
And the logo actually comes from a tattoo on Glenn Danzig's arm.
Oh.
Glenn Danzig has a tattoo on his arm of a bat with the Misfit skull as the head.
Right.
So when I was thinking of a logo, I was like, oh, dude, that would be it. Like, so I totally ripped that off and came up with a bat with a skull head. So that was the logo for 10/31.
Did you guys do something trick or treat? Like have a play on that?
I don't know.
Like, you could add a web series, 10/31 web series, Trick or Treat.
We never did do that. You know? We had a lot of Halloween-based stuff, but I don't think we ever did that.
Who was the first guy on the team?
Chad Knight.
Yeah. Straight off of American Gladiator, or was that pre-American Gladiator?
Pre-American Gladiator. I put out an American Gladiator board for him.
Wow.
I got a cartoon drawing of him. It's so good, dude. It's so good. It's a cartoon drawing of him with like oversized muscles in like the unitard thing, the thing he had to wear. And it was all red, white, and blue with stripes and stars on it with two model girls like hanging off of his legs.
What happened with that? Like, how did that even ever happen?
Well, so he got
into wrestling?
No.
Getting fit?
He met somebody. I don't know where. I don't know if he was like doing an audition for a commercial. I don't know. But somebody that has the ins with American Gladiator, because Chad's a pretty buff guy.
Yeah.
But apparently not buff. He's buff for skateboarding, but not buff for like the real world, right? Like real men's men, right? Whatever you want to call it. So somebody was just like, hey, I have the ins. I don't know. Some connection with American Gladiator. Like, Chad, you should audition to be one of the gladiators. So he was like, really? Like, he never took this serious. You know, for him, he was just like, what? Like, just a fun, goofy thing to do. So he auditioned to be a gladiator. But the people told him, they're like, you know what? You're not big enough. Like, he wasn't buff enough to be a gladiator. But how would you like to be on the show as a contestant?
Okay.
So he was just like... Sure.
Let's do it.
Why not? Let's just do it, you know?
And then he got demolished.
Demolished, man. Well, they put, for all fairness to Chad, they put him up, like the guy he was against was like a firefighter or something.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell that the show is going to let the skateboarder beat the firefighter. So you can tell that the gladiators like had it out for Chad. They just demolished him.
Oh, man.
But it's funny, though, because Chad was saying, he's like, dude, he's like, you know, because like I said, Chad's a pretty like in shape buff guy. And Chad's just like, he's like, yeah, man, these gladiators are massive. He's like, they're huge.
Yeah.
He's like, when I stood next to these guys, like, he's like, there's no contest here. These guys are like gorillas.
Yeah,
like
no,
superhuman.
For sure.
You know?
I know. I remember watching that episode because obviously it was a huge deal. Like, skateboarder on network TV or whatever. You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then it was kind of semi-embarrassing for him. But like, yeah, they did put him up against like a way different type of dude. I remember Cayman Islands. We were on a trip down there and 1031 team was there at the same time, so we spent a lot of time because it's just a small little island and there's a skate park and that's about it. And Chad was there and I think he wasn't drinking, and then one night he drank and went off the Richter and it was just so hijinks the whole time, and the lady at the skate park was bummed and there was all this stuff going on. But that was like so fun. Like, if you've ever not been to the Cayman, you need to put that on your bucket list because it's super cool in the Caribbean. But I was going to say, Ben Rayburn and CJ were two guys that came through the 1031 thing, and they were obviously Top Guns and fucking, I mean, everyone knows who those guys are now, but back then it was like they were AMs on 1031. And then when Baker took CJ went to Baker, I don't know if they took him necessarily, but and Ben went to Birdhouse. How was that? Did that kind of, did 1031 end soon after that, or did
no? We carried on for quite a few years after that,
uh-huh.
But it definitely, especially when Ben left, that made it tough,
mm-hmm.
And that was a tough one for me. I went into doing my own company. Like at first, I was trying to take like a real hard stance on like, you know, and I was just kind of like going off of like other examples I've seen of other team managers of how they would deal with stuff. So I kind of like, you know, was very protective of trying to keep my guys. And not to mention, too, like, hey, I did 1031 with my buddy that owns Beer City Skateboards.
Oh,
and Beer City
that's
Records.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we ran that company out of our wallets, man. Like that was our money. Like, so when we ran Thrasher ads, like that was our money. Like,
yeah,
I spent a lot of money on doing this. So when Ben left, it was, I took that hard. Like I took that really, like, I don't know. It just wasn't nice. I was just like, man, that's really sucks. But he didn't go to Birdhouse. He went to Slave.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. He went to Slave, and then from Slave, he went to Birdhouse.
Okay.
But, you know, it was a learning experience for me, too, because as time went on, I was just like, yeah, you know what, though? Ben's a good dude. You know what I mean? He's such a sweet kid. And,
yeah,
you know, I think it's a learning experience. You know what? This whole thing with skateboarding. Sorry if I'm going off the track here. But, you know, there's always so many people doing so many different things that everybody has opinions for. But as I've gotten older, I realize we're all just like these young people. Like getting thrown into these situations we never dreamed of, ever thought we'd be in. And everybody is just trying to do their best they can, growing as a person and trying to make the right decisions for themselves. You
Absolutely.
Know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So like, I think in retrospect, I was like, yeah, you know, like, so by the time CJ, he got recognized by Andrew and he called me up and he was like, hey man, I'll never forget this phone call. He's like, dude. He's like, Andrew Reynolds called me up or something like that. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. He's like, dude, I don't know what to do. And already I'm thinking in my head, like, I know what you need to do, you know? And he's just like, dude, he's just like, he wants to hook me up with Baker. And by the way, Baker was CJ's favorite company.
Uh-huh.
That was his favorite company. And he's just like, dude, he's like, but I love 1031. I was like, CJ, come on. I mean, come on, you know? So, you know, that was like the learning process for me going from Ben. It was just like, dude, come on, man. You know, like I feel like I don't remember what I said, but I just feel like at that time when Ben left, I had more of the attitude of like, dude, but you know, why are you doing that? I spent all this money on you. I've been trying to help you and whatever. But then by the time CJ, that experience rolled around, it was more of like, you know what? this is how it's supposed to be, man. Like,
so Ben was the first to leave.
Yeah, there may have been somebody, like some other AM rider that have left. I don't remember something prior, but as far as like, you know, my big guys. But yeah, by the time CJ left, it was just like, hey, man, you have to ride for Baker. Like, yeah. I can't do anything more for you. Yes, would I love to keep you around forever? Yeah, that'd be great. But you know what, man? It's just not how it is. So I think you kind of have to, like, you got to find the balance of, like, trying to do what you can to better your business and all that. But also, you have to think of the bigger picture, you know? The bigger picture is he's your buddy, and he's getting an offer that's, like, I'd take that offer too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's
like
a dream. I mean, he fits Baker so well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's perfect for Baker.
Yeah.
So but it's got to be bittersweet. You're like, dude, I want to see you, you know, get bigger and grow, but losing you is going to suck. So it's like having kind of mixed emotions, I'm sure.
Yeah. But like I said, when the Ben thing was a little rougher for me because it was my first experience with it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure, like, I'm also a young man trying to, like, how am I supposed to react to this? What's the appropriate way, you know?
Right.
In retrospect, it's just like, yeah, good. I mean, I'm so grateful that, like, I had some part of in it, you know what I mean? Of, like, being able to help them in their early days, you know?
For sure.
So I think it's just great.
Do you talk to those guys ever?
Occasionally, yeah. Occasionally I get messages from... I don't know, it'll be random. Like, I'll get messages from Ben or CJ, like going down little memory lane stuff about 1031 or, you know, it's just stuff like that, you know.
Okay. Throughout all the years, you've definitely been on the road with Preston.
Yeah.
I think you got at least one good P-Stone story for us.
Oh, man. Oh, man. I just, when I think of Preston, man, I just, you can't help but smile, man. So my favorite times at Preston were back when I was filming my Thrasher part for Gopher Broke.
Yeah.
We filmed that part. I filmed it all with Preston. We filmed it all in Cleveland, and we filmed it all in like a week.
I remember that.
And it was so, I always loved being around Preston. Like, I mean, anybody that's ever met Preston just knows what a jolly, positive guy. You're like in the worst situation. It's always Preston to be like, just all of a sudden just pulls out like this positive something. Like, there's always something positive with
Preston. We got this, no problem.
Yeah, we got this. And I just say my favorite times were, we were staying at my mom and dad's and just like him just hanging out with my mom and dad, like really late at night or early in the morning. Like, I'd wake up and he's like already drinking coffee, talking with my parents. I'm like, what is
Abba-dabba-doo.
Yeah, like, what is going on here, man? Like, that's like my favorite stuff of just how much this guy like catches me off guard of just like, dude, this dude's just like hanging out with my mom and dad. Like, I'm still in bed and this guy's like hanging out with them, like, so jolly. And
he's doing the dishes. Your mom's telling him he doesn't have to. He's like, come on, stay seated.
Yeah.
You want more coffee? I got you.
Exactly.
How often are you still skating a lot?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah. So I still skate as much. I mean, I try to make it a goal to skate every day.
Oh, damn.
It doesn't always work out that way. I have two little girls now, and now I'm in an area where the weather can be awful.
You're right.
But I try to make it a point to skate every day. And sometimes that means that I'm literally out front while my daughters are riding their scooters and bicycles, and I'm just doing like flat ground. Sometimes that's what my skating is like for the day.
Okay.
But yeah, I still skate, and I still try to push myself. Yeah, I still go for it.
Do you got any cool local parks?
Yeah.
Indoor, outdoor?
There's a bunch of little outdoor parks around here. Nothing to write home about. But my favorite is actually this park my buddy designed. It's in Lakewood, and it's the Lakewood Park, and it's just, he kind of designed it just like a little street plaza, really. It's just a lot of banky type stuff, ledges, highway dividers, handrail hubbas.
Sick.
Two little like 3 foot tall vert quarter pipes. It's really kind of an odd little park, but it's nice because the way it's designed, it me and my buddies that are like, you know, 40 and over, we meet up there on Sunday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice because the way it, like I said, the way it's designed, you kind of almost have to stop at one end of the park all the time. So it creates an environment where you can like chit chat and drink your coffee, take a run, hit some tricks, come back, chit chat, take a sip of coffee, You know, so
it's kind of like bowling night.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Boys get together and kind of socialize and do a few fucking slashes.
Yeah, and there's they have a brand new park in Cleveland, like right outside downtown. That's it's okay. Like I've skated a few times, but my go-to always seems to be the Lakewood Park, and I think it's really probably mainly just because. It's, you know, that's where my buddies go, the 40 and overs on Sunday mornings, and it's just a delightful experience.
You skated like an indoor bowl yesterday?
Oh, my gosh, yes. So this younger guy I know he bought a house on the west side of Cleveland for like $70,000, I think he told me. Yeah, it's crazy. He's got a little one-car garage. He used to work for, I could be wrong, but there's a concrete skate park building company called like Evergreen or something like that.
Yeah,
he used to work for them.
Okay,
so he knows how to like pour concrete. Sure. And he works for a concrete company now.
A lot of people out there are like, fuck Evergreen, Grindliner Dreamer.
I don't know anything about that stuff. I don't know. So he has this little one car garage, and he dug down into the ground, and he's got a little mini bowl that fills up the entire one-car garage, if you can imagine.
Sick.
That. 4 feet deep in the deep end, 2 feet in the shallow.
Wow.
All self-poured.
Pool coping?
Yeah, pool coping.
Oh, damn.
And some brick in a corner. And it's the tightest, littlest bowl, but it's so rad. Like, where are you going to find that?
Yeah.
It only exists in his garage.
I bet indoor places around here are fucking... If you find one, you're like, I need to be that guy's friend.
Yeah.
Because it's cold as shit right now.
Yeah, there's a couple around. I don't really go to them because I'd rather skate outside in the cold than be indoors, but there's a couple. There used to be some really good ones back in the 90s. Yeah, Chango World. The first Chango World was amazing. The first one. Remember with all the
loop-de-doos? I never went there, but I saw videos of it, obviously, and I always wanted to go there.
Oh, yeah. I used to skate there before it was even open. Like
the one in the warehouse with all the ramps that you just, it was like a pump track almost.
That was here.
Fuck.
Yeah. In the 90s, it was the BMX guys that started it.
Yeah, yeah.
You used to go there on a Saturday night at like 1 in the morning, and you'd have to knock on the door, and they'd peek at you, and be like, all right, you can come in. Yeah. And then we would skate like till 4 in the morning.
For some reason, the Think team, I used to work for Think before Thrasher.
Yeah.
They went there. Yeah. And for some reason,
Phil Shaw was there.
Phil McKenney, a bunch of those guys, Jesse Pius, Jerobel probably. I didn't go for some reason. And they brought back the footage, and I was like, that looks like the raddest place I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was there.
It's like kind of like a low ceiling, though.
Yeah, low ceiling, yeah. I was there. I remember when those guys came through.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was here back then.
How fucking rad. Yeah. That place looked amazing.
Yeah.
So what are you doing? Do you have a job out here, or are you just Mr. Mom, or what?
Yeah, well, no. So I still do the skateboard thing, and then obviously I do that with, well, I don't own it, but I ride for Mike Valley's company, Street Plant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I ride for Street Plant, and then my wife is a realtor, and then my wife and I also started an appliance repair business about 3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So we own a little appliance repair business, and we would do that in San Diego, and then we moved here and we just transferred everything over to here. And
do you guys do the work?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. Oh. Fix stuff. Actually, when I'm done with you,
refrigerators and
all your kitchen and laundry appliance needs.
Dude, my microwave just went out. What do I do? Yeah. Why don't you buy a new one? They're cheaper than getting them repaired.
Pretty much. Yeah. In fact, when I'm done doing this, I'm driving out to my buddy's house to help him fix his dryer.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Did you go to school for that?
No, I didn't. I got turned on to it from a friend of a friend, and I knew nothing about it really. I just was like, 1031 was over. I was burnt out on doing my own skateboard company. I was riding for Mike with Street Plant, which has been just beautiful because riding for, you know, he's my best friend. So it's pretty much like, do whatever you want, Svitak. Like, I got you. I support you. You do whatever you want. So I was just like, I was having a conversation. It was like New Year's Day. I was hanging out with some friends in the park, and my friends are all self-employed. They all have their own businesses, but with different backgrounds. And I was like, man, I really wish I could get something going like outside of skateboarding. Like, I just want to get something going that's like, that the real world needs, right? Like, I don't care what it is. Like, I just don't care. I just want it to, be so I can start my own business, work as much or as little as I want, travel when I want, go on skateboard tours when I want, go on band tours when I want. and make the money that I want to make.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a friend of a friend. He's just like, you could do what I do. And I was like, what's that? He's like, I have my own appliance repair business. And I was like, what? I was like, dude, I don't do that. I don't know the first thing about that. But we got to talking. I was like, dude, that's like, he's telling me the money he makes, the hours he works. I was like, that sounds amazing. He's like, yeah, I'm going to drive around, stop at Starbucks, stop at the skate park, whatever.
You can on call?
Yeah, dude, my wife answers the phones and like gets calls, and dude, I'll go out and do some calls and meet up with my buddy for coffee, hit the skate park. My wife will call and be like, hey, where are you at? You want to go take this call? Hell yeah, you know, go jump over and make a couple $100.
Damn.
Hit the skate park. It's pretty sweet, man. I mean, I won't say that it's been easy because I knew nothing about this, and I literally jumped in this not knowing anything. I went and took on a full-time job a few years back in between skateboard tours.
Okay.
I went to this place by my house in out in California, and I walked in there, and they recognized me because I buy my appliances from them.
Oh.
They're like, yeah, you're the pro skateboard guy. What are you doing in here? I was like, I want to learn how to fix these things. They're like, what? I was like, yeah, man, I want to learn how to fix these. And they're like, they just laughed, and I was willing to do it for free. Like, uh-huh. I wanted to learn how to do this,
right,
to start my own business.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, well, and I told them my deal. I was like, listen, I go on skateboard tours. I'm in a touring band. I tour with music. And I was like, they're like, how about this? They're like, you got some, like, we'll just hire you full time. We'll pay you. Uh-huh. And let's just work around your schedule. So I took on this job for like I don't know how many months. I don't know. It was maybe like 3 months or 4 months. It was in between tours. And then finally I had to go to like China and then somewhere else. And I was like, hey, I got to do this stuff. And they're like, okay, well, we can't let you do that. We understand you need to do that.
Right.
It was a mutual agreement with me doing this with them. And they're like, listen, if your pro skateboard career ever like dies down, we'd love to have you back or whatever. Cause they were like, we can't let you go to China. Cause then everyone in the company, if they want to go somewhere, we have to let them. We can't just let the special pro skateboard guy just come in and out when he wants. But I was able to learn enough, you know, from that to be able to go and start my own business. So,
wow.
So yeah.
How cool. How do you feel about them calling Cleveland the land? How long's that been going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't call it
the
land.
Is that the hipster? Is that new stuff or has that been going on forever?
It's some new stuff, man. Okay. I don't know. I still haven't given into that. People are always referring to the land. I'm like, the land? What are you? I don't know, man. It wasn't the land when I left.
Okay.
When I left, it was the steel mills were shut down. Everybody was out of work.
Yeah.
You get knives pulled out on you or guns pulled on you skating downtown.
Bone. Shout out to Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Shout out. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it came with like the whole LeBron thing. I don't know.
Probably. LeBron ruins everything.
I will say I'm really happy for the city because I feel like the city is in such a better place than it was when I left in the 90s. I'm happy to see people have pride in the city.
Yeah.
Because when I left, there was no pride in the city. But I think what happened is like, I feel like my generation was, you know, the city when I left it was a different generation running the city.
Right.
And the steel mills went bust and all that. But now what you have is like my generation are now in their 40s and now they are in the position to, you know, they're opening restaurants. They're opening up art things and they're being progressive about it. And they're like, hey, you know what? Like we're from the city. We love the city. Let's make it rad. And right. I'm blown away. Like I'm blown away. I think the city is a million times better than it was when I left in the 90s, but because I'm just an old guy, I still refuse to call it the land.
I won't call it the land either.
Yeah.
Well, we're looking out at Lake Erie. It's the shallowest lake up here, and this is my first trip up to Cleveland, so I think it's appropriate that you and I sat down. When I think of Cleveland, I think of you.
Well, thanks, man.
The skateboard world. And I appreciate that you don't live in Cleveland and you took the time to drive out here from your, you know, your what, 20, 30 minutes?
Yeah, I'm about 20 to 30 minutes outside the city. I'm out in the burbs.
Well, I appreciate it. It's been great catching up with you.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, since you are a music guy, if you have the rights to a song, you could walk us out of here with an intro into one of the songs and we can jam out to it.
My old San Diego band, The Heartaches. You know what? There's a really good song I like we did called Kamikaze Love. Wait, before we get out, well, before we end it, I want to tell one story. I've been waiting to tell the story.
Oh, I think this is the question I forgot to ask.
I think you're the appropriate person. I've been asked lately, because with Jake dying.
Yeah.
And I think it's appropriate to share the story with you, because you were very close with Jake.
Right.
And we were talking about this earlier. So since Jake's passed away, I've had a lot of different skateboard friends here in Cleveland ask me, like, oh, did you know Jake and whatever. And I never was close to Jake. I didn't know Jake well. But I have a great story that I love sharing with people.
Okay.
Because, well, you know, like you were saying earlier, like, you know, he was a rowdy guy that spoke his mind.
Yeah.
And maybe
not everybody loved him.
Not everybody loved the guy. So I've never had a bad experience with Jake.
Mm-hmm.
But I also am kind of like the guy, like, when anytime I was around, I observe people a lot. And I, you know, anytime there was a situation where I thought things were maybe getting kind of wild or whatever, and Jake was there, I just kept my distance. So maybe that helped me to where I never personally had a bad run-in with him or anything like that. I've been around him times where it was wild.
Sure.
You know? But here's my favorite story. So I never knew him really well on a personal level, just around being around skateboard stuff. But when we did that King of the Road.
Yeah.
Back in, what was that, 2007?
Yeah, 2007.
Okay. So King of the Road.
Oh, he got in your van.
Yeah. He was in our van. So I was in the Black Label van. Jake getting into our van. This was definitely going to be the first time I'm spending like a lot of time with Jake. P-Stone's filming King of the Road. I'm like, oh, dude, this is going to be shit, man. My whole rule is I'm the sober guy. So if I'm going to be the sober guy, I always volunteer to drive.
Right.
And drive through the night, whatever it takes to get everyone, to get the team where we need to be safely.
Sure.
So my whole thing was, so you guys rage, you guys party, pass out in the back, don't worry about it. I'll get us to freaking Atlanta by the morning. So I would jump in the driver's seat and drive like those long, like in the middle of the night, like 4 to 6 hour drives through the night, right?
That was back when King of the Road was way gnarlier. Like you would go east to west.
Yeah.
Now it's just like Oregon to San Diego. Back then it was like, and there was no HD. You had tapes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Sorry, but yeah.
So everybody, you know, I'd get in the driver's seat and everybody would have been, you know, either skating super hard all day or they'd also have been partying, so that everyone was just wasted and burnt out. So you look in the rearview mirror and the whole van is, everyone's just passed out in the back. Jake, which would go just as hard as everybody,
yep,
all day long.
Always.
Jake would, every night, he would come sit shotgun and next to me and he would stay up with me all night long driving.
Yeah.
And
would he DJ?
Dude, I would DJ,
because
I'm very adamant about if I'm driving, we're listening to my music.
Okay.
But he dug it. Like, he grabbed, like, he would go through my tapes or CD, whatever I had.
Yeah.
And he would play, like, my, let's play this, whatever. Yeah. So not only I'm going, being in a van, I'm like, oh, man, how's this going to be being with Jake Phelps in a van for this King of the Road tour, right?
Right.
Now he's sitting shotgun with me, but him and I would have the best conversations all night long. He would sit shotgun with me, he'd stay up with me, and we would talk about skateboarding and we'd talk about music all night long, because Jake has a really good, like, far background in like old punk rock and East Coast hardcore and stuff.
Absolutely.
And man, those memories of with Jake and having those conversations were just so great. And he was so kind to me. He was so normal, you know what I mean? And to one point during one of the late night drives, I turned to Jake and I was like, I just straight out was just like, I was like, dude, I was like, what's your deal, man? And he's like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, like, you know, like every day, dude, like you're wild, man. Like you're just so wild. But like every night, like you're so normal with me. Like when we drive, like when you sit shotgun. And I can't remember his answer verbatim, but it was something to the effect of like, well, you know, I just have different sides to my personality or something like that. And
yeah,
I'm
different
ways with different people or at different times or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember like having such a great night driving with him, talking about his old stories of like, you know, hardcore shows and my stories and music and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And not to mention, that guy's got like a photographic memory.
Yeah.
He was calling out photos of me. He's like, Sweet Tack, I know, Thrasher, issue number whatever, January, you know, 2004, page number, blah, 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 you were doing this. He was calling out stuff I don't even remember about my own photos in Thrasher.
Yeah, for
sure. I was
sure.
Blown away. And I told him that too. I was like, dude, you have like a photographic memory.
I've seen it a million times.
And you know what I said to him? I was just like, you're one of those people, like you have a photographic memory and it drives you crazy. Yep. I was like, it just drives you crazy.
Blessing and a curse, he would always say it.
Yeah. And I fully like just, so anyways, we had this great, so many great conversations driving in the middle of the night. And then I remember like, it was like one of the last days. It was like the next morning, everybody's up in the hotel and my connection with him, it wasn't there. You know what I mean? Because all the boys were up, it was back on and it was back to like wild time. And I just remember like, I was like, oh man, I was almost bummed because I was like, oh man, like no more late night drives with Jake, you know?
Well, the thing with Jake is I think that it was pick your windows and enjoy them, but it's a window because he wanted to experience everybody.
Yeah.
You know, he had his favorites, obviously, we all do. Yeah. But I think, honestly, from going on so many trips with him, that when you were on a trip with him, it was like a crew.
Yeah.
And like, he might have a guy or two in there he's not particularly stoked on.
Right.
But we're all on a mission and we are all doing it together. Yeah. And that will live with us forever. If you don't go home early and you make it to the end of this trip, we'll have that bond for the rest of our life and we'll share that. And I'll always remember you.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
You had my back. I got your back. Yeah. All that kind of shit. He really came from that mentality. And it was so sick to see, like maybe you and him wouldn't get along on a regular day.
Yeah.
But if you went on in the van and went on the trip with them, you might have the best experience of your life, and he might too.
Yeah.
Because it's cliche and everyone said it a million times, but he said it, and so I'll repeat it. He was a fan of skateboarding. Yeah. Fan is short for fanatic.
Yeah.
And he was a skateboard fanatic. And so if we're all doing this for the love of skateboarding, but if the real quick, on that same trip that you're talking about, the King of the Road, so Jake and I flew to Milwaukee. We got all the people for the guests to join their teams in Milwaukee. It was the midway point. And then Jake and I were to fly home. But Jake was like, fuck this. I'm going to jump in the van and drive back. I want to see some of this shit. Like, dude, fucking live skateboarding. This, like, if there was room, he's jumping in, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I flew home alone. But when I got back and you guys at the finish line, I see everybody. I think Preston, I forget who it was. Somebody told me that you guys, one of the challenges was to go to Pike's Peak.
Oh, my God.
And the van was so heavy that the brakes went out on the way back down, and it was real scary, apparently. Yes.
The brakes were burning up. It was awful, and I remember Jake and Chet were just, Burnett wasn't there, but I think Burnett, that was one of Burnett's things he came up with.
And they were pissed at Burnett.
They were like,
kickflip on Pike's Peak, are you trying to kill us?
Dude, I feel like they even, called Burnett and were like bitching him out.
Yeah.
Like so mad. They were so mad at Burnett. Dude, one more quick story.
Sure. About Jake.
This is like a funny story. We were at a spot, I think it was in Arizona or whatever, but Shuriken did a trick. Shuriken Shannon did an awesome trick. I don't remember what it was.
It was an Indian ditch.
Yeah.
Where he threw the
apple.
Yeah.
How does that happen? So Shuriken Shannon does this awesome trick at the ditch. He lands, we're all cheering. Shuriken's like riding away or something, and Jake's so excited he throws his apple into the sky.
Yeah.
He throws it, and it somehow lands and hits Shuriken right in the head. Like, I mean, he didn't aim for Shuriken.
No.
He just lofted it way high in the air, and it comes down right on Shuriken's head and just explodes.
Oh.
And Shuriken's like in shock. Jake is in shock, and I remember he was just apologizing. He felt so bad. Like, how did I just nail the dude that just did the sickest trick? I just nailed him in the head with an apple.
And it partially might be on video. P-Stone might have captured that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's
because I know I heard the story and I might have seen part of it somehow or something.
Yeah,
shout out to Shuriken though.
Shout out.
Yeah, I don't know if like I remember it so well because I was there or if I remember seeing it in a video again. But anyways, yeah, the whole that you know with Jake, yeah, it's just like I just wanted to share that story.
Appreciate that. Yeah, there's never gonna be another Felper, and I'm not gonna be able to live without. Like, I'm going to remember him every fucking day.
Yeah.
I've 30 years with that dude, spent a lot of time with him. So it's going to be interesting, especially this next year, how things are going to be. But we're going to carry the torch and we're going to keep doing what we do. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, you want to fucking take us out of here with Heartaches?
The Heartaches. Yeah. This song is called Kamikaze Love by an old band I was in for, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 years in San Diego called The Heartaches.
And we out of here. This has been Talkin' Schmidt. Christian Svitak joined us. Really appreciate his time and appreciate you guys supporting the show and listening. If you can do me that favor, please hit the review and that helps the show populate and more people find out about it and all that good stuff. All right. This is it. Peace out, y'all. Thanks, Christian.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Cheers.
All right.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please subscribe now on Anchor, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like this show, one of the best ways to show some love is to write up a review. I always appreciate to hear your thoughts, and detailed reviews are the best way for people to discover us. Also, a big shout out to our executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it.